The following program is sponsored by Friends of Life Outreach International. Next on Life Today, Kelly McGuirk looked for acceptance among people in the drug culture at the age of 15. 6 years later, she was imprisoned as a result of multiple felonies.
The emptiness that I felt is indescribable. I mean, I would go to sleep and just wish that I didn't wake up.
Stay tuned for a powerful story of redemption and freedom.
Hey, Betty, look out there. Go ahead.
Welcome to Life Today. Thank you so much. I'm about to lose my voice. Well, don't let me talk enough. I'm losing it.
No, don't say that. I don't let you talk enough. Because many of you say, why don't you let her talk more?
When you can't see in the cameras, I'm saying, come on, trying to get her going. Thank you for joining us today. I'm Betty, and this is Jane.
We're really excited about having our guest, Kelly. We heard her story at Gateway, which is the church in Southlake where we go, and there are several different campuses. And this was quite a remarkable story because we're hearing the story of a girl who's been to a several-time felon, been to prison several times, had some real issues. And the story just, well, it really overwhelmed us. And we were just everybody. I mean, I think that weekend there were 25,000 people that were attending Gateway that weekend, and it was just a joyful testimony. And they showed the story and told it. Then all of a sudden, Robert Morris, our pastor, says, "Now I'd like you to meet this young lady." And she comes walking out on the stage, and the place just exploded because people were so grateful at what had happened in Kelly McGuirk's life. And she was grinning over here because she said, the name's not too easy to say, but it has something like go to work and you try to do it. Well, this is Kelly. Welcome, Kelly, to Life Today. Kelly, we're so glad to have you here.
Thank you so much.
We love this, hearing your story. I think Gateway Church actually does a remarkable job when they do their video presentations. They did such a good job. I said, why don't we just show that? But we really wanted to talk to you.
Yeah.
And I want you to start before what we heard, because you'd been to jail, mm-hmm. been to prison. I mean, you were kind of a multiple time loser.
Yeah.
And you had some real issues, but you had issues before the drug issues and those things that got you in jail. Tell us a little bit about Kelly's journey.
Well, I grew up in a really small town in Southeast Texas, and a normal childhood for the most part. My parents divorced when I was 8, and I think that, you know, divorce is traumatic in general when it happens. I think that's where my just bitterness kind of started. And so we moved around a lot, me and my mom and my brother. We moved to a new town probably almost every year. She had a new job, so I was very adaptable. And this performance-driven thing was started in me. And I just wanted to be accepted. And I can remember from a very young age just wanting to be somebody else. And I would look at my friends and fantasize about having their life. I mean, everything about myself, from my hair, my skin, my height, I hated. And so I tried to stuff that down with just being good at things, either being smart or athletic. And so we moved to the Fort Worth area, and I started high school. And this is where my life really started to take a downward spiral. Just relationships, different crowds, and this is also when I started doing drugs. And the funny thing is, you know, I tried to hang out with the popular people and never really fit in with them. But the drug culture didn't care what kind of genes I had or how much money my parents made. And so I felt accepted. And it wasn't necessarily the drugs that drew me, but I had a place to belong. And I think the attraction after using drugs was that it made me feel like somebody else. And I was welcomed in the community, and, you know, I really just dove in headfirst. It wasn't a slow progression. It was a whole lifestyle change. Any kind of goals or dreams I had of, you know, going to college or just, I mean, went away totally. And I was only concerned about getting my next fix or high. And I would think, oh, I'll never do that drug. I'll never go there. And then I would find myself there and think, well, this isn't that bad. It's okay. At least I'm not doing this. And always made excuses for, it's okay. It's all right. It's not that bad.
Justified a little bit.
Yeah. And even after the first felony charge and the arrests from shoplifting didn't matter. It's like the lower I got, the more I didn't care. And the more I didn't see a way out. And so, you know, after the first felony, I told everyone that I was arrested for a misdemeanor, which it wasn't. No one really knew the depths of my drug addiction. No one knew that I had meth on me all the time, that I would go in the bathroom every couple hours, no matter where I was, and do meth. And I did a pretty good job at making it look like I was okay on the outside. I held up a job. I was going to school. But people could start to see the downward progression. I don't think my mom or anybody really wanted to believe what was really going on, but it was very obvious that something just wasn't quite right. And so I was on probation for the first felony charge. Still could not get off drugs. I mean, I only had to stop doing drugs for 3 days before I went in to report and give a drug test, and I couldn't even do that. And so I would go in, I would provide a dirty drug test, and then I would have to go to jail for the weekend. And so I would go to the jail, and it just didn't matter. And then I got another felony charge while I was already on probation for meth again. And this time I was in jail for 8 days, and everyone found out what I was originally arrested for. So now the secret's out that I'm a meth addict, and no one feels sorry for me anymore because I've been lying for years. And so this made me feel sad that now I'm busted, but it didn't make me change. And so I was placed in rehab and had to detox off of everything. And the day I got out, I started using drugs again. So I then had to go to jail for 3 months. It was part of my probation. And this was really the longest I had ever spent off drugs since I was 15. And I was 22 at the time. And the emptiness that I felt is indescribable. I mean, I would go to sleep and just wish that I didn't wake up. Mm-hmm. And it's like I had the weight of all these years I couldn't handle it. And so I got out of jail, and my mom had started sending me little Joyce Meyer things while I was in jail, and there were people praying for me and people that didn't know me. because this kind of shook everybody up.
Would you read any of them?
I did.
Mm-hmm. And why did you read them?
Well, you really don't have that much to do when you're in jail. and you don't. And they'll give you a Bible. That's the only book that they'll let you have. Mm-hmm. And so
I hope that continues. Mm-hmm. You never know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And people would kneel by their bunks and pray. And so I thought, okay, well, I'll pray. You know, it's not a bad idea. But there was no connection, because growing up, I really thought that only old people went to church. I never knew someone my age that loved God and made it look appealing. I never knew a Christian that had something that I wanted.
You're sad.
And so I would read these things, and then I got out, and I moved back in with a guy that I had been seeing before. And he wasn't a meth addict, so I kind of rationalized, like, well, it's okay. You know, I'll just do my best to try and not go back there to the way I used to live. And I had been out of jail for 3 weeks, and I was going to start working again. I mean, in the world's eyes, I was doing much better. You know, I had been off drugs. I was going to start making money. But this, out of everything I had been through, this was my rock bottom, which is funny because it's not where anyone would have thought it was. And I remember I was sitting on the couch, and I glanced into the kitchen, and the guy that I was living with and his buddies were all about to do drugs. And this is the first time I ever heard God speak to me. And I didn't even know that God really spoke to people. I didn't know that He was tangible, that and relatable. And I was sitting there, and I looked over into the kitchen, and God said, "Choose me. Give me everything. I'll never leave you. I'll never disappoint you." And I was so empty that was like, well, okay, sure, let's give you a try. And I got up and I packed a backpack, and I told the guy that I was living with that I was going to be moving out. I said, I can't explain it. I can't live here anymore. And that moment, I always think of the Wizard of Oz, because it's my world went from black and white to color. And I feel like that's the day that I woke up and came alive and felt like I had never felt before. Just such a peace about such a love that I've never known at all. And I will never forget that moment. I didn't just get saved. I am set free. You know, it wasn't the testimony of the drugs is so awesome. And I don't want to, you know, make that smaller than it is, because it is amazing. But to me, the getting over the anger and the bitterness and knowing my worth in the Lord,
that's big.
Because I didn't believe that for so long, is such a bigger testimony than I used to do drugs and now I don't. The peace in my heart, that I believe I am who He says I am, is...
Don't you think probably those things that are really big to you is because that's where the root of it was?
Yes,
it's where
absolutely.
It started.
Absolutely, it is. And I think I have such a heart for women, and I'm in the beauty industry, so I think it's so awesome that the way I want to communicate beauty and help women know their beauty is not the superficial way that the world says it is, because that's an area I've really struggled to okay, I have to be this, I have to look like this, I have to do this, and knowing that that's not where my value comes from, and to lean on that is just, it's so, so validating.
What happened, they reported in one of the stories that they did at Gateway, you looked over and where you were in church, who was by you?
Well, it was my meth dealer. And it was one of those emotional mornings anyway, where I was just so grateful that God had chosen me and saved me and set me free. And so I was already sobbing, and then I feel a tap on my shoulder, and I turn around, and it is my meth dealer. And I just lose it. And he, you know, has gotten clean and is married and has children. And so just to...
That's the greatness of God. And you know that inner beauty is what it makes everything else different.
Yeah.
And it heals it all, the joy. I remember when she walked across the platform up toward Robert and, you know, 25,000 people were cheering. We could see the joy of the Lord in her, which one reason we wanted her to come here. Father, I pray for everyone watching today who feels empty and overlooked and unimportant. Please help them know how much you love them. Listen to me. Look at me. Look at me. He loves you so much. He died for you. For you. And He was raised to live in you and to give you life. Ask Him to give it to you. Turn it over, just like Kelly heard. Give Him a chance. Let Him in. If you'd like someone to pray with you, dial that number. I'd like to send you a little introductory study that I wrote for you. It has a little bit of my story, my journey. It's called Knowing God as Father. And then it leads you into a very simple Bible study. Tell you about God as Father and friend, Jesus living in you. Just call and say, I'd like to have that. Have someone pray with you. Say, I don't want to be the same. I want God to fill my life with love and peace, meaning, value and worth. And He will. Kelly, I'm so grateful for what God's done. You know, our viewers who know the Lord, they love to do what we're trying to tell little children in this little touchy-feely book that is really about children at the well learning to draw from the water of God's love and life when they're little children. This probably start with a 3 or 4-year-old up with a 7 or 8-year-old. And then the women at the well, the 32 refreshing devotions from women that have been here, of course, including Betty and our daughters and so many, Beth Moore and many that you know and love. But you know what people enjoy doing? Not only drawing from the well, but drilling wells. I want you to listen to Tammy Trent. We should listen to God. See if you wouldn't like to give a cup of water and refreshing in Jesus' name. Watch closely.
When we walk into these villages, they basically are just looking at us asking, can you help? Can you do something? We need help.
She's saying like, when we don't have another one, what to do? We need to use this one.
For children of poverty, gathering in a pond or stream to have fun is not the reason they are there. It's for the purpose of survival. Without water, these children and their families would not live more than a week. And when they have no other choice but to drink contaminated water, illness and all too often death become the bitter consequence of that inescapable choice.
Not one child has ever said, the water is perfect, the water is great, I'm feeling fine. Child after child, same story. They're struggling.
Our mission teams have spoken with heartbroken families from Cambodia in the heart of Asia, to Madagascar on the east coast of Africa, in rural villages of Central America and India, whose children's waterborne illnesses were so severe they died before anything could be done to save them. So massive is the problem of contaminated water that every 20 seconds a child dies from a waterborne illness.
Time is of essence. There's hundreds of thousands of children dying every year because of contaminated water. Let's change that for them. Let's be the change. Let's do something now. Let's not wait till it's too late, till we lose another child who can't do anything about it, till we lose another family. We can do something now. We have an opportunity to be life to so many people who need it so desperately through fresh, clean water.
I know that we cannot meet every need. We can't heal every pain. We can't even touch all who are in pain. But we can help some. And we've been able to join with you, viewers of Life Today and friends of life all over the world, who have literally said, we're going to reach out with the hands of Jesus and touch those people. We're going to show them love. We're not just going to tell them about it or proclaim it or even preach it. We'll do that. But we're going to give them a demonstration of love. So here's what we've been doing now, Betty, for years. And you and I have had such a joy from the beginning, not only of going and finding the need, but also of giving to meet the need. When we first started drilling wells, they were $3,600 for a well. Costs have gone up. They're $4,800. That's still incredibly reasonable. It's almost miraculous. That's the average cost. But we asked God to let us give a well, and we've been able to do it. And sometimes, to be honest with you, we've given several in a year because we said, God, enable us to be able to do that. We made it a prayer goal. But it always starts with just a little. You can't believe how many people started giving $48. And then after several years, they were able to give $1,200. And they prayed, let three join us. We've had incredible stories. Children who said, we want to help, and they go to raise money for a well, little kids, little Bible study groups. But what normally happens, couples, individuals will say, I'm going to do my part expressing the love and the heart of God. And Tammy showed us all those children all around the world. We're going to join, and we're going to help drill a well. This year, we're drilling 500. We're halfway there. We need to complete the 250, and we've got a hard-hit areas right now that's really serious, where there are droughts and terrible conditions, and even the meager water sources they had are depleted and gone. So I'm asking you if you would help us drill a well. If you can drill a well, $4,800, write a check, use your bank card, call the number, and say, I'm giving a well. Or I'm given part of a well, $1,200 or $2,400, please. Or you can go to lifetoday.org and make the gift. But most of our friends, Betty, most of the money comes from people who give $48 that gives 10 people water, or $144, as an example, gives 30 people water. That's where most of the support comes. So if you think because I can't give a well or, you know, a fourth of a well, whatever you can do, think about it, for 10 people. It's a miracle for the children of parents that you saw who had lost their children. We saw a couple sitting there by little mounds of dirt where family members were buried, children. Would you dial the number or go online right now, please? Father, I pray every person who can help will do it and do it gladly in Jesus' name. Thank you for making that call. We have some beautiful gifts to send you to bless the children you love, to help you journal on your journey, and to be a blessing in your home. Thank you for giving life-giving water, giving even more than a cup of water in Jesus' name. Thank you for doing it.
Every day, children of all ages are forced to make a dreadful choice: drink filthy, polluted water filled with deadly disease, or face death from thirst. No child should ever be faced with this decision. With your gift today, you can help establish and drill new water wells for those in need, impacting over 20 nations. Your gift of $24 will help provide clean water for 5 people. A gift of $48 will help provide for 10 people. $72 will impact 15 people. And $144 will help provide fresh, clean, disease-free water for 30 people for a lifetime. And now, because of a miracle opportunity of a matching gift of over $326,000 for 68 new wells targeted in drought-stricken Angola, your gift can be doubled. With your gift, be sure to request the new Children at the Well interactive book to help your little ones understand the blessing of clean water, as well as the Women at the Well daily devotional with 32 refreshing devotionals for your quiet time. With your gift of $100 or more, you may also request this beautiful leather journal to help capture your personal times with God. Finally, please consider a gift of $1,200 to help provide water for 250 people, or a gift of $4,800 to help sponsor a complete well, and you may request our commemorative sculptured glass statue, The Blessing. Please call, write, or make your secure gift online today.
You know, we're excited to send you the books that'll bless you and you drill the water wells. I hope that you'll really take advantage of the journal. Journaling has helped Betty in her journey in life, and especially since the loss of our beautiful daughter. And it'll bless you. Our daughter Robin, before she passed away, Betty gave me this. Yeah. Said God told her to.
That's right.
And boy, I can't tell you what a blessing it was. We want to send it to you. And Kelly goes to Gateway, where they meet at the Northwest campus. It's an old, totally beautifully remodeled, and it's fabulous, Winn-Dixie.
Yes.
Well, you get some real bread and food there
yeah.
now at Gateway. But you feel free to join us at Gateway or find a place of fellowship wherever you are. Anywhere on the planet, look for fellowship in the presence of the Lord. Join us in thanks to Kelly again for a wonderful story, wonderful testimony, and praise to God for His transforming love and power. Tell your friends about life today. We'll tell them about life now and forever. Thank you for watching.
Tomorrow on Life Today, Beth Moore identifies problems with living under legalism.
God could not have been better to us than to have given us grace.
Life Today is made possible by the supporters of Life Outreach International. Your gift will be used exclusively for the exempt purposes of Life. The ministry features specific outreaches as examples of the programs it supports and conducts. Gifts are considered to be without restriction as to use unless explicitly stipulated by the donor. The ministry is a member of the ECFA.